special edition of Planet Waves FM for the Vision Quest project. This is the first in a series of recordings associated with the astrology of 2016 that I will be offering to you over the next few weeks. My name is Eric Francis, the host of Planet Waves FM. This is a special edition for the night of December 21st, 2015. This is, by the way, the anniversary of the first publication of Planet Waves, which happened on this night in 1998. As my memory has it, it was on an evening with the sun in the very last degrees of Sagittarius, about to enter Capricorn, but I cannot recreate that chart, so I just used the Capricorn solstice of 1998, set in Hohokus, New Jersey, as the chart for the Planet Waves project as such. So happy anniversary there, Planet Waves, and thank you to the many people who make Planet Waves possible and the hundreds of people who have been on my various different creative teams over these past 17 years or so. It's an honor to be with you here. You are listening to music from the Vision Quest project, which my friends Daniel Grimsland and Daniel Sternstein began a few months ago. I thought that the sonic dimension of the project should really begin with vibrations, with sound and tone and sonic color, rather than with words and concepts, and then we would move from the realm of pure feeling, pure vibration, which is music, into ideas. And that piece, by the way, was called Savannah. We just did a little edit on it to bring out that beautiful guitar by Daniel Sternstein, my brother, the man who's been teaching me guitar for 3 years. Yeah, 3 years? More like 2 years. All right, and here we are on the night of the solstice, and I've got some stories to tell you about what the astrology of the next 4 or 5 seasons is about. I think that astrology is a storytelling art more than a technical art or science. There certainly is science to it in that we have to know where these planets are and we need to know about them. So there's calculations that are done mostly by computer. There is astronomy that is learned mostly by study, by reading, by conversation, listening to programs like this, and most importantly, through practice and observation. But really, the heart of astrology is the telling of a story. So this gets us out of the mechanistic realm of astrology, out of the clockwork of the universe, the gears that are moving and the levers that are flipping, and it gets us into the human realm, the realm of narrative, of experience, of seeking meaning, which is something that is done gently, that is done with an equal emphasis on the inner world and on the outer environment. And as such, astrology is a study of this, what you might think of as mutually overlapping environment. The environment within and the environment that we experience around us. This was a breakthrough for me in my understanding of astrology and of my taking steps away from that mechanistic viewpoint that is taught so liberally in astrology and into the cyclical, the numinous, the looking into the ethers and not really understanding what you see and then making associations. And so the first association we have tonight in a little while, I'm not sure when I've got, I'm looking right at the chart, at 11:47 and 55 seconds p.m., that's just in about 3 hours-ish from now, from what I'm recording anyway, the sun moves into the cardinal sign Capricorn. When the sun enters a cardinal sign, we know that a season has changed. And so one of the many ways that astrology is just part of normal mundane life and not some special topic is that it is closely associated with the changing of the seasons. The winter in the northern hemisphere anyway begins when the sun enters Capricorn. For our friends down under, places like Johannesburg and Auckland and so forth, lots of places, Sydney and Perth, tonight is the longest day. Today is the longest day, and tonight is the shortest night. And for us up here in the north, having a relatively mild winter, it is indeed the longest night. The sun is angled as far south as it's going to go. That's why the days are long and the weather is warm in the southern hemisphere. The sun is pointing down there, or rather the earth is pointed in such a way that the southern hemisphere is facing into the sun's rays more directly. And then the angle shifts as the earth moves around the sun and the days get longer and the sun moves in a northward direction toward the northern solstice or the Cancer ingress of the sun when summer begins. When the sun is at equinox, parallel to the equator, when the sun's rays are parallel to the equator, that is when the signs Aries and Libra begin. And so these are the cardinal points of the year. They are considered the major turning points, and they are integrated with real life. That is to say, season changes, sun enters a cardinal sign. Who would have thought? And so the sun enters Cap in a little while. Right now it's lingering right in the very end of Sagittarius. It's what's called void of course at this moment. That's always interesting, or certainly can be interesting, because the sun is not really going to do very much else before it changes signs, then a new story begins. And the story that begins is in part the story of a solar year, because I count the solar year really to go from Capricorn to Capricorn, you know, in alignment with the civil calendar. It's pretty close, right? And we get that kind of somewhat neat framing. And one of the ways to divine using astrology is to look at the chart for the season changing and make up a story about it. Tell what one sees in that chart. And what we see in this chart is, first of all, that the sun is joining several planets that are already in Capricorn. Those planets are Pluto, which has been there since 2007, defining one of the major eras of our time in history, and Mercury, and an asteroid called Pallas Athene. And Mercury and Pallas Athene are conjunct. They are in very close conjunction. They're a fraction of a degree, about one quarter of a degree apart. And this is a lot of emphasis on Capricorn, and it's telling a specific tale, a specific, let's say, elliptically structured story. It's not that we know exactly the beginning, the middle, and the end, but for example, we are reminded of a long journey of Pluto through Capricorn, which spans from 07, I believe, till 2024, quite a while. It's going to, it lasts a while, and that's a long story about the restructuring of society. And so if you're wondering what it is that is having our entire society and many other world, world cultures in upheaval, part of that can be described by Pluto in Capricorn. You know, just to give an idea of how that looks in real time, when Pluto first entered Capricorn in 07, the very next big thing that happened was a collapse of the American banking system, with many corporations getting into serious trouble and requiring a close look at the structure of one of the most fundamental systems that we live with in society, which is the way that money is handled. And so it was so uncanny as to be predictable. I'm sure there are many predictions by astrologers, many of whom take a keen interest in banking, about what would happen when Pluto entered Capricorn. And to have a banking and corporate finance crisis with Pluto in Capricorn is kind of symbolic. And so that just continued. That built and proceeded and developed, and there were problems in Europe and then problems in Asia, and everything requiring restructuring in the United States. We did a recapitalization of the banks, and we just kind of used the magic of debt to be able to refinance the banks. This was not done quite the same way in Europe, which is operating on a somewhat thinner dime than we are here in the United States. But this is just one of many, many ways that society has been restructured. And really, prior to a restructuring, I think also what we're seeing is a kind of a breakdown, a kind of shattering of the somewhat, it's old structures of Capricorn. And sometimes they seem very solid and durable, and then sometimes they can seem very brittle when there is a kind of a tectonic force applied to them. And one of the ways this is influencing us personally is that wherever we have Capricorn in our charts, there is a kind of a restructuring going on. There is a deep cleaning, you might say. It's a little like having your teeth roots cleaned and scaled. I had to do that once, and because I didn't take care of my teeth. This was probably around 2002. And so the dentist said, you've got to have a cleaning and scaling, or you're going to have periodontal disease. And so I said, okay, let's do this. And I thought this was going to be the worst thing in the world. And they split it over four sessions, wound up doing it in three. And they get in there and they clean out all the stuff that doesn't belong there and kind of put things back where they belong, and you have to get some Novocaine to do it. And every time I walked out of that dentist's office, I was euphoric. Now, this might have been the Novocaine, but Novocaine is not supposed to make you euphoric. I think I was euphoric because I was doing something on the level of Saturnian structure that was designed to help maintain something, help maintain the integrity of something. And your teeth are very important. And Capricorn, among its things it rules, is the teeth. It rules anything where there is a bodily structure involved. And that includes the skin, because the skin is one of the most important structural elements that contains the body in a nice, neat, sensitive package. And so with Pluto making its way through Capricorn, we're getting a kind of a scaling of our collective teeth. And where you have Capricorn in your chart, there is some kind of a major renovation going on. Now, in the Vision Quest readings, I look at where Capricorn is in the solar charts for the different readings, which work for sun sign and for rising sign, so I can personalize this somewhat and describe, for example, the process you might be going through if Pluto is moving through your fifth house, as it is if you're a Virgo, sun or rising, for example. And what we are experiencing collectively is a big upheaval that is matched only by the personal upheaval and sense of crisis that many people are in personally and individually. Now, for the past 5-6 years or so, Uranus has been in a square aspect to Pluto in Capricorn, and it has made seven peaks between 2012, spring of 2012, and spring of 2015 this year. It made seven peaks. The square always does that, or at least in the previous ones I've checked, the square makes seven contacts when Uranus and Pluto meet up. And so there was a lot of energy coming from Uranus to Pluto, kind of pushing on Pluto and energizing that and giving it a corresponding sense of personal reinvention in the sign Aries, where regardless of what your first house is and regardless of where Aries falls in your particular chart, the sign Aries is almost always a dependable place to look for experiences of self-concept, and in the case of Uranus in Aries, self-concept reinvention, kind of a revolution of self-concept. Now, Uranus gets into Aries to stay in March of 2011 on the day of the Fukushima incident. It was, I believe, in the very last arc minutes of Pisces at that time, but still it was the day that Uranus changed signs, and that was a reminder that we really need to mind our structures. We need to take care of the underlying reality that is not so necessarily visible to see. That means taking care of things like electrical wiring and plumbing and foundations and the roof and the things that protect us. And there is also the addition of all that energy, which creates a situation where things will be pushed out to their limits. And I know that many of us feel pushed out to our limits, and there's a huge amount of responsibility that we are under right now. But I would also propose that there is a lot of wasted energy, and that we are partly living in the thrall of the glamour of Uranus in Aries. There is a very strong association we have with the technological themes of Uranus, and those are fully impregnating Aries, and there is very little separating self-concept right now from our technological self-concept, because so much of who we are is so often projected into the technosphere. It was unusual for people to even type very much, much less be constantly typing and entering data into transmission systems and information storage and retrieval systems. Now we do it day in and day out. And there were a lot of dramas in the world with the Uranus-Pluto square. As the aspect was warming up, there was Arab Spring. There were the protests in Wisconsin. There was the Occupy movement. And then in the wake of Arab Spring, there was a massive collapse of order and infrastructure in the Middle East, where all these countries had their Arab Spring uprisings, but there was not sufficient structure to contain the release of energy, and there was not sufficient maturity, and there was a lot of manipulation going on, and there were a lot of bombs falling, most of them dropped by your old Uncle Sam. And so we also have an example there of a kind of intentional destruction with the combination of Uranus and Pluto. Now, one of the things that happened in 2015, is that the central astrological theme carried for years by Uranus square Pluto, I feel like I wrote about it, no fewer than 200 times, the torch was passed to Saturn square Neptune. And that began, I would say, about a year ago. We started to come into an effective range of that. And then when Saturn settled into Sagittarius to stay for the next 2 years, a couple of months ago, made its first exact square to Neptune, and we began a new, you might think of it as a mini era of astrological history, a new major chapter in the story of the astrological sequence of events kind of shifted, and a new energy has taken over. And this new energy is much more yin than Uranus square Pluto. Uranus square Pluto was pretty darned yang. It was a lot of doing it because you could and taking territory and a bit of smashing things, or a lot of smashing things, and some uprising and a lot of push energy. And now, if we take the Saturn square Neptune aspect and we apply too much push energy or apply it in the wrong way, we're likely to sort of get the Jeep stuck in a bog and have to tow it out. Now, it is necessary to apply forward pressure in some way, but the style of applying that pressure is very different. It is more persistence required than what you might think of as radical reinvention or revolution or tearing things down. There's a combination of a melting energy, because Neptune is in Pisces. It is in the wateriest of the water signs. And Saturn is in Sagittarius. And so when you look at what Saturn in Sagittarius represents, that being a kind of concentration of formed ideology, is encountering Neptune in Pisces, which is more of the direct experience of things of a spiritual nature. We're having a kind of a meeting between the spiritual concept, the religious concept, and the spiritual or religious experience of Neptune in Pisces. So that is different than kind of go wild and tear it up and, you know, the kind of high voltage stuff where we have been seeing is becoming different. And there is more of an inward pull. And certainly this aspect can represent a point of crisis for people, because beliefs tend to die hard, and we tend to put way too much emphasis on belief rather than, for example, seeking truth, seeking understanding, seeking one's personal reality. That is less about belief, I think, and more about questioning belief. When we're done thinking about processing and questioning and dismantling beliefs, or perhaps even before we're done with that, there is the entering of the realm of experience. There is the direct sensation of something that is happening, something you tune into in a way that can be off the normal spectrum of what we think of as the mental level. And it might come through on what some spiritual traditions describe as the etheric level, or perhaps the astral or causal levels, a few steps down from the etheric level. And these things can be tapped into through Pisces. And so Saturn, in making a square to Neptune, is calling our attention to Pisces. And we are in a kind of a golden age of Pisces right now. There is a combination of factors in this sign that we really haven't seen anything so beautiful for quite a while. And the combination of factors includes, of course, Neptune, the modern ruler of Pisces, discovered in 1846, one of the very first planets discovered by science. And there is also a newcomer to the scene called Nessus. That was discovered in 1993. It's currently the earliest planet in Pisces right now. And then there is Chiron, which arrived around 2010. And then there's another planet called Borysici. And all of these are slow movers, by the way. They're not the kind of quickly moving thing that just spends a few weeks. Nessus is going to spend around 18 years in Pisces. Neptune will spend almost that long. Chiron is on kind of a 8-year run. It's about 2/3 of the way done with that. And Borysici is going to take a while too. It is out there by Pluto, moves very slowly. And all of these speak about the different ways that we can directly experience what you might think of as spiritual energy, or tapping into the environment by a kind of osmosis. And one of them, let's take them in the order they appear by degree. So we've got some structure here while we're in Pisces. Nessus in Pisces. This is a challenging one because it is about taking responsibility for one's feelings. When we live in an environment where everyone's feelings overlap, it is very easy to ascribe responsibility for how we feel to the actions of another person. And it is one of the most challenging things that we can do on a path of personal growth to be able to own our feelings, regardless of what someone else is saying or doing or not taking responsibility for. And, with Pisces involved, the various levels of projection, dualism, and so forth can sneak up on us. And so think of that Nessus in Pisces factor as the buck stopping here. That means in the final analysis, we are all responsible for what we feel. Now, this, of course, goes up to a certain point. I mean, if someone is actually in your presence threatening you, it is possible to forgive this thing of, I make myself feel a certain way. But even then, even when we are confronted by extreme circumstances, it's necessary to hold on to ownership of how you're reacting, if for no other reason, so that you can move into a mode of appropriate response. And the midground there is the discussion of boundaries and feelings, because in the story of Nessus, there is plenty about things people do to each other and who's taking responsibility for what, who knows what about what they're feeling, what they're doing, what they're inflicting on others. And yet, the when you do all the resolution of Nessus, it would seem that the final statement of Nessus is, my feelings are self-generated. I have a choice what to feel, and I'm going to use that power of choice. With Nessus, as all centaurs, there is the healing element, and so you might say that this is a healing project. And further, with Nessus, there can be the specific understanding and seeking of basically information about experiences that have traumatized us in the past. So there can be some repressed grief in Nessus, particularly Nessus in Pisces, and these experiences that we have that may be things where, you know, we project onto someone else or blame someone for something can be slowed down and read, contemplated, talked about, felt through for ways in which what we are experiencing is a playback of something else. Now, the next planet in order is Neptune. And Neptune is adding a whole bunch of water to Pisces. I think that this is a awesome thing because what Pisces needs is to constantly have water flowing into it. Any Pisces knows that. You've got to drink water and get yourself near water and flowing water and have a general condition of moisture in you and around you. And Neptune has bestowed Pisces with moisture. The ocean is being refreshed. And for those of you who are natal sun Pisces or Pisces rising, you may remember that long journey of Neptune across Aquarius. It was like crossing a vast desert. It was like perhaps flying in an airplane over an ocean, unable to actually touch that ocean, and that airplane flight seemed to last forever. And you may well have wondered how it was that you made it on the small amount of fuel that you have. These vast distances seem to reach a shore when Neptune reached Pisces, and that presented us with a profound shift of energy that basically, in the style of Neptune and Pisces, affects everything coming from the background. Then there is Chiron in Pisces. And Chiron in Pisces has a focusing effect on Pisces. Neptune has an inspirational effect. It can represent escapism. It can influence dreams and make things seem possible that are not necessarily readily available. It can come with a sense of isolation for those who have prominent Pisces in their charts. There may be some of that. And it can also do that thing that Neptune does with its second syllable being tune, which is help tune us into the music of the spheres, but that is often experienced below the level of awareness. Chiron brings it to the level of awareness. Chiron brings anything it touches to a sentient, fully conscious level. And so Neptune works in a kind of opposite way as Pisces. You might think of Neptune as being the film or the projection through a movie projector, and Chiron as being the lens that focuses the projection. You can have the best movie. It cost $200 million, like the new Star Wars film, and the most beautiful theater and the best projector and a full audience full of star-studded people and little robots and Chewbacca. But without a lens, there isn't anything. Nothing. You can't. All you see is a blurry mush. And so Chiron provides the focusing power for Pisces, the ability to do something, to apply that inspiration. And so that is one of the things in the couple of brief years that Chiron has left in Pisces that I suggest everyone do is apply their inspiration in some way. Speaking personally, it's one of the reasons why I have been so focused on my music and my art in these years, knowing that this is the time to establish that pattern, to bring out from deep inside my other creative desires and to help establish them, to kind of orient myself around them. And there is still time to do this. Many other manifestations of Chiron and Pisces, one of which, for example, is healing the whole issue of faith. There is a crisis of faith going on the planet right now. It is not an easy time to be alive. It is not an easy time to be faithful. Many people who are the faithful types feel as if their faith is being tested, whether it's their faith in humanity or their faith in the whole flow of events here on the planet. It is a very trying time, and Chiron is keeping many of the most painful facts of life right in our faces where we have to deal with them. And it is working in concert with Nessus, another centaur planet, which has very similar properties as Chiron, in the process of helping us integrate what you might think of as the facts of life, the facts of physical reality, with the background source of energy that we can tap directly into. There's one more point in Pisces, slow mover, and it's been in a conjunction with Chiron. Actually, Chiron, which moves quicker, has been in a repeated conjunction with it. That conjunction is still in effect, and this is a curiously Piscean point. It's called Borsisi, and Borsisi is about truth and lies and about the whole nature of belief. And so one of my ideas about Chiron conjunct Borsisi is we're really having to understand the difference between belief, observation, and actual personal truth. Belief pretty much subverts observation and the quest for personal truth. Belief is like a big obstacle. And it is very frail. And it's one of the reasons why people are so adamant about their beliefs and defensive about their beliefs, and why, for example, we live in a world of wars that are largely justified by belief. In this case, religious belief. And though it may not seem like that, because the United States is not, you know, declaring jihad literally, as the radical elements in the Muslim world have declared jihad against the West and against Israel and so forth, there is a lot of religious motivation driving, for example, the quote-unquote good guys' side in this ongoing war between the various religions. The Muslims, Christians, and the Jews are still at it. It's been a long time. It goes all the way back to the first few pages of the Bible, in fact, where there were all these crises that came, and these sons of Abraham create these tribes, and the tribes are still at war, and this is all about religious belief. And so Chiron is working on that whole topic, and it is essential that we understand when we are being driven by belief and when we are being driven by faith, a different thing, and when we are motivated by a deep personal quest for truth. By the way, as Saturn moves through Sagittarius, it's going to continue to make squares. So all through 2016, we get the Saturn-Neptune square. And then toward the end of the year, we get the Saturn-Chiron square and Saturn-Borsisi square. And so we get to conduct a kind of a vast experiment for most of 2016 about what to do with these pesky things called beliefs, and what do we do with our isms and our preformed concepts and our prejudices and our judgments and the unloving ways we are taught to be spiritual, you might say. And once Saturn is done making these squares to Neptune, then it arrives at the Chiron-Borsisi conjunction, and there is some kind of a test. And that test, as I understand it from my research into Saturn square Chiron, involves authority. How do we deal with authority, and in particular, religious authority? And so the question will, it is more personal, it's more internal, it's more about a melting down of one's internal authority trips and dramas. And then once Saturn is clear of Neptune, though remember, Neptune has the widest orb of all the planets, but still the square will be separating, and as it separates, it moves into a new square to Chiron. Then there is a kind of encounter with some more tangible, more focused authority trip. And of course, that authority trip is going to have something to do with what we believe about that authority. And so we have an interesting year ahead of us, and I've only scratched the surface of the astrological aspects that we will be addressing, though I have brought forth a couple of the more salient ones, a couple of the more obvious ones. In the next installment in this series, as I warm up to doing the audio readings for Vision Quest, I'm going to be warming up, throwing my warm-up pitches with these readings and working with the so far approximately 51 pieces of music that me, Dan, and Dan have composed and recorded. I'll be talking about the Uranus-Eris conjunction, so I'll introduce to you the new planet Eris. By new, I mean it's only 10 years old. It was discovered in 05, and it was named in the summer of 06, so we're coming up on the 10th anniversary of the naming of Eris, the Eris archetype being kind of presented to us in a tangible way, and the implications of this major, let's say, delineator of our time in history. This is the yang piece. If Saturn square Neptune is a bit more yin than astrology we've had in the past few years, there is no way to really sum up how extroverted, outgoing, and expressive of energy is Uranus conjunct Eris in Aries. It is, after all, a conjunction. It is two planets that are super high energy, verging on capable of violent overthrow of things in the case of Uranus, and subversive overthrow of things in the case of Eris. And there is going to be a good amount of thinking about what it means to be a self. So we might call this next installment on Uranus conjunct Eris excursions into I am and I am? Question mark. And then in a future one, we'll also look at the coming Mars retrograde in Scorpio and Sagittarius and the Mercury retrograde cycle. There is plenty to talk about. And I've been writing about all these things, interpreting them into the written readings for the astrological signs. I would seem to be on track for getting those wrapped up by the end of the year. I will then take a break and then spend a lot of time sitting at this microphone talking to you about these aspects as they manifest for the sun signs and for the rising signs. The readings for 2016 will also include a rune reading or an artifact reading. Runes being this set of letters from the Viking alphabet, and artifacts being the things that I have collected, and I do have a set of runes that is mixed in with many of the artifacts I've collected in my travels around the world to places like the Egyptian desert, an artifact from the Temple of the Virgin in Rome, and a very variety of other things. And so I'll be reading those for some of the signs and reading runes for some of these signs in audio and or video format. So that is a little outline, and if you are interested in the way this astrology is going to present you with opportunities and what you might think of as growth challenges, sign on up for Vision Quest. These readings are waiting for you. They are a labor of love. I've been working on them since August and have done them faithfully every year since 1999. Okay, lovely to do a short program, huh? These are going to be shorter programs. I'm going to take a break from the normal episodes, Planet Waves FM as managed. I will return with my New Year's Eve year-ending program in the early evening of New Year's Eve. So if you're one of those people who hangs out and stays home or hangs out with friends, that will be available as our kind of send-off to 2015. Welcome to 2016. Thanks for listening. Thank you for being a patron of Planet Waves. And I'll catch you with the next installment. I'm Eric Francis from Kingston, New York, on the winter solstice of 2015. Bye for now. Thank you.